meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. If you've been watching any news coverage here lately, you'll have seen that, I haven't got a lot of hair left on my head, but when I see stories like this, I start scratching. I'm going to be as bald as Kojak here one of these days. When I look at the Illinois State Police and whether or not they are behind this or it's a couple of people who are looking for 15 minutes of fame or what, I don't know. But the last thing I would want if I was investigating a crime is my undercover operatives to go on Geraldo. And that's exactly what's happened. Lynn Wozzeck and Paula Stark are claiming, and I'm not sure if this has been absolutely for sure verified yet, that they were working undercover for the Illinois State Police, audio taping Drew Peterson for a period of time. What I thought I would do is bring on Drew Peterson and his lawyer, Joel Brodsky, tonight to talk about just that. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Dana.
Hi, Drew. I guess I should start off, Joel. Was there a court hearing today? I was just getting some wire information sent to me right now, and Can you comment on it?
Oh, yeah. Where was the ruling on our motion to dismiss the weapons charge that was brought against Drew under a federal exemption? And the judge, he didn't dismiss the case, unfortunately, and we're disappointed at that, but he issued a four-page written ruling that almost assures us of victory at trial. He finds that Drew was a qualified police officer at the time of the indictment, or the time specified in the indictment. He found that the weapon in question was covered by the federal exemption, and there was just some questions of fact about it's very complex, but basically about how the manner in which Drew possessed this gun and whether that falls within the law or not. And obviously questions of fact have to be resolved at trial, but the judge specifically said that the state's going to have to prove that Drew was improperly possessing in the manner in which he possessed it was improper beyond a reasonable doubt at any trial, so which is going to be next to impossible.
Okay.
So we'd love the case to be dismissed. We're not displeased totally with the ruling.
Has a trial date been set then?
Well, we demanded a speedy trial. We filed a speedy trial demand today in court, which means the state has 160 days to bring us to trial. And we have a pretrial set on August 28th, and we're going to set the trial date. And we're looking forward to a trial sometime in September.
Drew, again, I'm not sure what you can comment on and what you can't comment on. That's why we have your attorney on with us. It seemed like things were quiet for a while. Obviously, the thought of the investigation going on is still on your mind. But then all of a sudden, all hell seems to break loose again. In fact, there was an altercation at a barbershop because you looked at somebody funny again. I had to scratch my head at that one. Can you comment?
Go ahead. Basically, what happened, I was getting a haircut, and Lenny Wozzeck's son walked in. I just basically just only gave my chins up, like, hey, you know, I'm not taking it out on his kids for what Lenny and Paula did, but I gave my chins up, and I guess he was on the phone immediately, called his dad, who confronted me when I was walking out to the car.
Certainly, again, from the perspective, and I'm not representing the Illinois State Police, but if I was the DA or the Illinois State Police and one of my undercover operatives was challenging someone to a street fight like a high school kid, I would certainly, you know, be a little panicky as far as credibility goes. Drew, could you comment, or Joel, either one of you?
No, Drew's never really said much. I mean, I've been taking the credibility questions, but no, Drew can go ahead and answer that. Go ahead.
Well, basically, I was undercover and worked narcotics for many years, and the last thing you want is one of your informants snitches to get involved in any type of confrontation, knowing in the middle of an investigation, you want them as low profile as possible. So, and this really isn't happening here.
Yeah, Joel, Illinois state law says that your client has to be advised of the wiretap. Has that actually happened?
No, we haven't. And we probably should have received some notice by now. So what I believe has happened is that I don't believe that Len and Paula were actually wearing listening devices on them. I believe they were probably working for their, or almost definitely working for the Illinois State Police. We know that there are some listening devices in Drew's car and probably in his house. And I think that they were sent in to try to stimulate conversation that those overhear devices could pick up. And I'm sure those overhears are still going on. But I really doubt that they were actually wearing wires. I mean, just from the description that they gave to some of the reporters about what the wires looked like, I mean, in no way, represent what modern, bugs look like. They're solid state now. You don't have to wear a type of wire to your body like you see on TV, like in the movies. This is totally different. So that's my feeling on it anyway. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah, one had to wonder when I saw the same media coverage that took me back to Get Smart and a Shoe Phone. You know, is this something that the Illinois State Police is common to use? But, Drew, if you can, tell us about how you met up with Len and Paula.
Well, basically, I've known Paul Lenny for the last 16 years or so. And basically, I was involved in a lot of their activity when they were arrested. I mean, for simple street stuff, fights and a drunken disorderly. I may not have been the arresting officer, but I was certainly there, assisting. And I've always been very good to Lenny and his kids. And whenever his kids got in some trouble, which was, once in a while, I'd go there and help them out and see if I could, straighten their kids out. I've really done a lot for them over the years, and for them to do something like this is very much beyond me. But one day, what was happening is when I was coming close to retirement, and I was going to go ahead and go into some rehabbing business, my house is, and let Lenny be involved in the rehabbing business.
Right.
And we became a little closer. So once all this broke loose, next thing you know, Lenny and Paul are at my department. And they became my instant best friends, and they were over like almost every day with the kids. I mean, it was like, and they wouldn't let up. It was like they were talking nonstop about this case, and it was like it was kind of nuisancey. But Lenny and Paula were certainly very entertaining, and they sucked themselves into the kids, and the kids basically were very fond of the two of them.
And that's something I commented on. I think I kind of wrote an open letter. That was posted on the internet. And it was obvious that they really made an effort to become very close with the children, especially Paula and Drew's little girl, 3-year-old little girl, and that the State Police had to be aware of that, and they also had to be aware that at some point in time the relationship was going to be abruptly ended. And, you don't have to be a psychiatrist or rocket scientist to know that that's going to hurt the children.
Sure, yeah.
And for them to, I think it's, get through at any cost, no matter even damaged psychologically or scarred children wouldn't even stop them. And that's disturbing. I think, Drew's always said, hey, I'm fair game. Whatever you got to do, if you think you can, you got to come after me, come after me.
Right.
I'm fair game. But I think it was wrong to do that, to have his children be used to try to further an investigation, because when Lynn and Paula became indispensable as far as babysitting and, taking care of the kid, or not taking care of, but, being with the kids and entertaining the kids, and the kids loved them, it was purposeful, and that's just, I believe the approval and probably the direction of the Illinois State Police, and I think that's horrible.
When we looked at this particular case, or this particular aspect of the case, Joel, and we talked about doing the show this evening, I made the comparison, and so did you initially, of saying, is Len Wozzeck Drew Peterson's Mark Furman? And when we say that, we say as an individual who may be detrimental to a case if a case is filed. Let's talk about that part of it a little bit. This is crazy, is what it is. The Illinois State Police have, in my to my knowledge, have not either denied or confirmed the fact that these two individuals were working for them undercover. But there have been more leaks, I think, from that office, in my opinion, than a two-bit rowboat out in the river. And I have to wonder if it wasn't a leak that drew the media's attention, or have you heard it was these two individuals that went to the media looking for attention? I can't fathom any of this.
Well, there's first of all, Andrew Abood and I, who are together representing Drew, we agreed to talk today, and we agreed that the state's case, whatever that may be, and we don't think there's much of a case, but whatever they had, it's worse today than it was 2 months ago. It certainly worked. Their case is worse off today than it was before Lenna Paula went to the Chicago Tribune. So they certainly set whatever case they may have, it ain't much. It's worse. It's been set back. Second of all, I mean, if I had a pick, if I had a choice, you know, if I wanted to pick informants who were going to snitch on my client, I don't think I could choose better ones. Actually, we want to send out maybe a thank you card. I get stuff on calls and leads almost on a daily basis about the reputation of Paula and Len, about Paula being fired from a job for embezzlement. I get a call from her employer. It's just every day. I mean, it's incredible. So I can't understand why the Illinois State Police would associate with people like this. I know that the state's attorney's office would have nothing to do with people of this reputation. I know that for a fact. They have a very fine state attorney's office, an excellent prosecutor by the name of John Connor on this case, and a real honorable guy, and who's going to do his job and to the best of his ability and do it well. But I'm sure he wouldn't associate with him. So it's got to be the Illinois State Police.
Well, I certainly think that when it comes to, if it comes to, and that's a clarified if, to trial for anything, you will be going after credibility issues, and I'm not sure if this show is the time to do that, but it certainly brings into credibility those media outlets that give these two individuals their 15 minutes of fame. Drew, I'm not sure if you've seen any of it. If it was me, I think I'd turn it off just as quick as it came on, but can you comment on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think we got a couple people much in the same quality as Rick Mims. They were probably doing this to, make some sort of money on it. So, I mean, both of them are in financial trouble with all this. So it's like, I think they're just looking for some money. And what better way to do it than, go undercover and attack Drew Peterson?
Yeah. Well, The media seem to be all over you like a bird on a bug, and I've always been of the opinion that if there's a case that's being investigated, do it. The media's there, and I guess they need to know something, but this has just been too wide open, Drew, and I'll ask you and Joel both this, and there's been some vile attacks against both of you from some talk show hosts with charges not even being filed yet, and I'm not here to talk about guilt or innocence, but we've mentioned Geraldo Rivera on this show before, you and I, Drew, and Joel, and he just can't seem to let up.
Well, Geraldo Rivera has trouble keeping his own name straight, so we refer him to in Bolingbrook as the nuisance of news, so that's all I can say about him. I mean, I went on national TV one time and explained that my biggest mistake in all this was letting him in my house. And he hasn't gotten a single quote of mine straight. He's vowed to come after me, but I think what's going to happen, he's going to misquote me to death. So,
yeah, I mean, Rivera, I guess, is the worst of the of what we're dealing with. And
sensationalist, let's call him.
Absolutely. When Drew's cleared of this, I hope he has a large liability policy to cover his slander and libel. Because it's going to be a simple apology is simply ain't going to work. He's not. He doesn't say. For example, he doesn't say alleged murderer or alleged suspect. Or, he comes out and says, uses those words. Reminds me of that guy who was accused, wrongfully accused of the Olympic bombing in Atlanta.
Right. Yep.
I can't remember his name right now. Jewell.
Richard Jewell.
Yeah, Jewell. It reminds me of something of that, you know, something like that. You know, I always say this, you know, democracy is hard. You know, it's hard to somebody to give somebody that you believe in your gut is guilty the benefit of the doubt, but that's the country we live in. I mean, you know, we want to have a presumption of guilt. I guess if, you know, the Taliban were willing and able to take on anybody that wants to come in with them, but here we, you know, the media and this country is built on, you know, presumption of innocence, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. These are the core values of our judicial system, and it seems like the media just finds those to be an inconvenient problem rather than a value.
Well,
as far as the media is concerned, too, I think it sells better if they keep you sinister.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the stare, the Dirty Harry stare, and that's my term that you gave the boy in the barbershop here the other day. Gee, if you just look at someone and it starts a fight like that, you probably want to stay in your house with the shutters closed and the door locked.
Well, it wasn't even a stare. I talked to the people that were there that day, and I said, did I give this kid any type of grief or stare? And they said, no. So all that stuff was fabricated to give Mr. Wozniak an excuse to... I'm trying to take a swing at
me. Joel, there's been some civil aspects of this case as far as Kathleen Savio. Can you comment on any of those?
Yeah, the appeal is pending. You know, they haven't filed any wrongful death or case. And, you know, actually, we had a motion pending for what they call stay pending appeal. In other words, that would prevent them from doing that. But we decided to withdraw it because... We would, if they did file it, we decided that the subpoena power the civil suit would give us would probably benefit us more than hurt us. And you know, but they're not filing it. And I think for the same reason, they don't want to give us the subpoena power. So kind of everything in the civil end is kind of on hold until, at least for a while, until this investigation spins itself out.
If you folks are just tuning in, Drew Peterson, former Bolingbrook Police Sergeant, and his attorney, Joel Brodsky, are here. And we're talking about the alleged wiretap or monitoring of Drew Peterson by Len Wozniak and Paula Stark. And to my knowledge, Illinois State Police have not confirmed or denied this. But I, and this is me saying this, am just amazed that if this is true, that these two are allowed to run amok on the media, around the media, the way that they are. Drew, what's next for you?
I'm just raising kids and living my life. Really, I got nothing else to really do. My life's kind of in limbo right now, waiting for the gun charge and to work itself out. And this ongoing investigation they have, I'm pretty much stuck with everything. My life's on hold.
This is a tough question for you, and if you don't answer it, I understand, but do you expect to be arrested like Geraldo Rivera predicts by the end of summer?
Well, if Geraldo's predicting it, then I could probably say no. I would like to just say that I really don't know what they're doing. I have no idea. I mean, it's just like every month we get a new rumor or something coming out that my arrest is imminent, and
yeah, and I have a theory that I think it's almost confirmed, because I know there were a lot of rumors that Drew was going to be arrested in court today. We kind of, you know, maybe let our water off Doug's back at this point. It doesn't bother us, because I think that people are floating rumors, whoever they may be, Illinois State Police or media people or whatever, to try to rattle Drew's cage. But he is not getting rattled. And, I mean, I think the only people that are really getting rattled by these rumors are the producers over at Greta Van Susteren and Today Show and Good Morning America. But it certainly isn't rattling Drew, so...
Well, you know, you guys brought a lot of ratings to them, that's for sure, and
yeah.
That's not what this is about. I'm sure when the case is, if the case is going to be filed, it'll be filed and you'll be given notice. That's, you know, without a doubt. But when I hear comments like that from the media making predictions as far as the arrest goes, that takes away from the credibility of the case, in my opinion. That's, you know, where we're going here. And one last question, Drew. Your attorney wrote about the psychological torture of your children. Actually, there have been a couple of stories that I've seen about your kids and how, and you've said it yourself, you know, they're a victim here also, and what can we do to try and help them? I'm just curious on your comments on that, because your kids have gone through a lot, no doubt.
Yes, they have, but the thing is, I'm with them constantly. I mean, I'll go out maybe once a week, and they're in bed already, and other than that, they're with me constantly. I mean, it's like we'll go to water parks, we'll go to event shows, and we just spend nonstop time together. So if they have any questions or they see them feeling upset about it, anything, I'm on it right away. So I'm dealing with their situations almost immediately anytime something would arise. And with this particular incident, we just basically had to tell them, because my little girl was asking, could we go see Paula? My little boy wanted Lenny at his birthday party, his buddy. And basically, they just had to be told that, you know, these people weren't our friends, and we're not going to be seeing them anymore. And basically, that was it. So they really haven't asked a lot since then.
That's tough on the kids, for sure. Gentlemen, thank you.
My pleasure, Dan. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good night. Bye.
That's Drew Peterson and his attorney, Joel Brodsky. And again, when I interviewed the both of them, I'm not here to talk about guilt or innocence. The cards will fall as they may. Will Drew Peterson be arrested by the end of summer, like Geraldo predicts? Maybe. And I'm sure his attorney is building a defense as quick as he can. My whole concern with bringing them on tonight is I was just amazed to see undercover informants come on and make the media circuit. It's just rubs me the wrong way. And if they are undercover informants and they've got good information, then put it on the table and let's get on with this. All right, that's it. That's my interview with Drew Peterson and Joel Brodsky. Love me or hate me for it. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back with someone who's in the know, Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County, Robin Saxton. We're going to analyze what I just said. We'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, and your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Now, I'm going to take some flack, because last time I had Drew Peterson and Joel Brodsky on, I took a lot of flack. But again, my point was, and there isn't a lawyer on earth that would let their client come on any show and allow a host to interrogate them or ask them, did they do it, or are they going to come on my show and admit to a crime? But what I wanted to talk to them about was this whole undercover Illinois State Police thing, and hopefully we shed a little bit of light and got what they think about it, and in order to analyze my interview with them and talk about a couple of other things, I thought I'd bring on a Los Angeles County District Attorney, Assistant District Attorney, Robin Sachs, to go over what I just talked about with Drew Peterson. Hi, Robin.
Hi there. How are you?
Real good. In fact, I've got a little bit of breaking news here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and I know you were covering this on Nancy Grace the other night. As soon as I'm done interviewing you, I think I'm going to be able to bring on Cindy Anthony, who is the grandmother of Kaylee Anthony that is missing. You've seen lots of Cindy in the media here lately, so we'll be able to get an update from her. Cindy is very upset with the media, and I'm going to give her the opportunity to come on air and tell me just about that. Now, I brought Drew Peterson on the show tonight, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for it, but that's okay, to ask him his thoughts about being wiretapped, somebody recording his conversation. He and his lawyer both have said that they have not received notice from the Illinois State Police. They're not sure if this really even happened, and by watching some of the TV coverage, they're scratching their head. And what made me kind of upset with this is, if I'm investigating a case and I'm working with some undercover operatives, I don't want to see those undercover operatives on Geraldo showing where they kept their wire in their bra or in their jacket. That would have drove me absolutely nuts. Your thoughts?
Well, there is no sure way to blow a case than to find and get your discovery through the media. That's never a good way for anybody, any lawyer, to prepare for a case is to find out what's going on through it. Fortunately, in today's day and age where there is such a media frenzy, the leaks are crazy,
yep.
And it's just really common for that to happen.
And I said this, and Joel Brodsky wouldn't confirm it. I wondered if there wasn't a leak to the media somehow that brought the media to these people. He seemed to think that these people went right to the Chicago Tribune. Regardless, they still did. But, you know, when they start talking like that, giving, like you say, discovery over the air on Geraldo and other different programs, that's got to, you know, first of all, come to credibility. And then later on, your so-called undercover operative gets into a brawl at a barbershop because he doesn't like the way that the suspect looked at his son. Again, that's I use the term, and I'm going to get in trouble for this too, is Len Wozniak, Drew Peterson's Mark Furman.
Well, you are going to get in trouble for that. I agree with you on that. the fact of the matter is any time that an investigation comes up through the media, it's not good for anyone. Not good for the prosecution. As you pointed out, it sharply attacks the credibility and the integrity of an investigation. As prosecutors, as law enforcement, we are supposed to maintain ourselves above bar, doing things legitimately, and people have issues with undercover operations as it is, and tape recording and all sorts of privacy rights as it is, and then for the added dimension of having that information come out on the airwaves, and then the third level being that the defense doesn't even know about it or doesn't expect it, it's just then you start having a trial, many trials of many issues that aren't even around the issue. I mean, we're sitting here talking about wiretapping when then the fact of the matter is Stacey Peterson is missing, and Drew Peterson is the primary person of interest, and Now we're arguing over the integrity of an investigation, which should never be the case.
As a defense attorney, you think that this was Christmas, and I want to clarify the Mark Furman comment. I'm not saying that Len Wozniak is Mark Furman. I'm saying in a high-profile case like O.J. Simpson, who I believe was guilty, although he was found not guilty, because of instances like Mark Furman and the credibility of him as a witness, it was able to spew and skew the jury and the public's opinion in some cases about this, and I'm wondering if that's not the same thing that happened here.
Well, absolutely, and that's exactly the issue. And the bigger issue is you can't even say, well, we had no idea that this was going to blow up the way it did, because the case has already been a media focus. It's already been a case of interest for some time now. So you would think that there would be even more attention to detail and more of an effort made, just like the same argument I made back, you know, in the late 90s, which was, you know, you show up at OJ's house, you know that you're going to be in a trial. Yep. At the end of the day, he's not pleading guilty, and you think at that point you make sure you do everything, you dot your I's, you cross your T's, and not let any of, you know, even the common human error aspects come to play above anything else.
Well, it all comes to credibility, and all of a sudden you get a police detective who makes a dumb recording as something for a book or whatever, and he uses a racial slur, and all of a sudden it becomes not the case of two people in OJ that were getting murdered. It becomes a case of a rogue detective who made a stupid comment on an audio tape years before that, and I hate to see that happen with the Peterson case here. I asked Drew Peterson point blank if he thought he'd be arrested by the end of the summer. He said no. His attorney laughed because the media, Geraldo Rivera in particular, has been making predictions that this is going to happen. If it does happen, I hope it happens and they do it right, because we've seen too many of these high-profile cases go south.
That's true. I unfortunately live in the capital of the going south of in the high media land. Hopefully, we, you know, we'll have success in Drew Peterson, as we did with Scott Peterson. The fact of the matter is that there is nothing more frustrating, and I see this in, you know, sexual assault cases, for example, where there is really, and you can't really convey this to a jury, where there's really no defense to the actual crime. So instead, you look for the defense looks for the peripheral issues. In sexual assault cases, a lot of times what happens if there's a civil lawsuit that's filed too early, even if it may be a rightfully filed civil lawsuit, the criminal case becomes all about, well, you're trying to get money, and you, this is a civil lawsuit, and the acts get minimized. I see the same thing in these high-profile cases where you lose focus from the acts and the crime,
yep,
and get into these peripheral areas where they're just red herrings that jurors just walk right into and defense attorneys eat up alive.
And it's impossible. I don't care what some of these talk show hosts and some of these hosts say, that it's impossible not to have at least someone out there, because there's such a public craving for these types of stories that hasn't heard about Drew Peterson or hasn't heard about the Anthony case or whatever. And, switching topics here a little bit, if you're just tuning in, LA County Assistant District Attorney Robin Sachs is here, and we're talking about me and my big mouth. No, we're talking about me and the interview I did with Drew Peterson here a few minutes ago, but I want to change topics here a little bit and go to the Anthony case. I think we're going to have Grandma Anthony on at the top of the hour, but have you seen a case that has been such a head scratcher as this one, with contradictions, audio, video, pundits, mothers, grandmothers, you name it, and here you see this little doll, this poor little girl who's still out there somewhere, and the attention seems not to be focused on her so much rather than the mother. And my daily commentary here the other day was, I agreed with the family going to the court to try and block some of these jailhouse visits from being released to the media. I think that they're excellent as far as investigative aids, but I'm not sure if they need to be sent out there. They've done it. Why do they have to keep doing it? That's my thought. What's yours?
Well, I'm kind of tied on that question, because you're catching me at a, as a commentator, do I love being able to have something to comment on?
Sure, yeah.
So from that point of view, there's nothing, you know, better than having dailies, basically, almost like transcripts and new evidence that comes in every day to talk about and to analyze. So from a commentating point of view and analysis point of view, it feeds the desire to constantly learn more and understand this case, because I think the issue with the case is the head-scratching part of it is that it's actually not a head-scratcher. It's not a head-scratcher because if we were to look at this and this was the father who was the person who was sitting in custody right now,
yep,
there would be no doubt in anyone's mind that we would be dealing, unfortunately, with a murder case, and we would be, you know, the dogs would be out everywhere, we would be searching everywhere, and the focus would be on following the search. But the aberration here is that this is a mother, and we are watching a matriarchal family here,
yep,
essentially, where we're working through three generations of women and girls. You know, you have Kaylee, you have Casey, and you have Sydney, and they're all, and that's the part where you have all these females, so you have grandma in control, yet grandfather is a police officer and has law enforcement background, but we don't hear from him. We have the conversations with mother, who is a defendant who's detached, and you have brother who's there trying to make sense of it all, and then you have this missing adorable girl, and the only way to kind of come to terms with it, I think, from the media point of view and from the public point of view, is to understand what this mother could have been thinking. And so I don't think there's any benefit to having the tapes out there from an investigation point of view in terms of locating the victim, but I think that it is a opportunity for us to try to make sense of everything and get a sense of peace with how this could even happen.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. It's a story, a tragic story, and there's going to be a lot more said. I actually spoke with Grandfather George on the telephone here the other day, a very nice gentleman. He does have policing background, although many, many, many years ago. And it goes back, Robin, to that whole family thing. I've spoken to many family members on my program that are looking for their missing loved ones or have loved ones who are accused of a crime or whatever, and you want to try and protect them. You want to try and believe what they're saying. But in this case, there's been so many contradictions, so many statements and so many stories this way, that way, and the other way. And then seeing the young mother in court or in some of these interview videos that have been released with really no remorse 31 days before she even says anything about her missing loved one. What kind of a case is being built against her? It looks like a pretty darn good one.
Well, as I've said before, I mean, rarely do you have this much evidence, or at least this much evidence to kind of comment on before any charges have even been brought, before even a known exact crime that we're dealing with is at this point. Here, I mean, the statements alone, there's a jury instruction that I know we have in California and is similar ones in other states, which basically says a witness who's been materially false in one aspect could be distrusted in other aspects. And what that essentially means, and what that essentially gets argued to jurors all the time, is if you find that the witness made a statement that was false and they knew it to be false, you can essentially distrust everything they say. So basically, with that argument, with all those stories alone, besides the smell of the decomposed body, besides the lack of doing anything for the 31 days, besides the stories not actually checking out, you just on the her statements alone, is there is going to be automatic distrust and lack of credibility, whatever ultimately comes out of Casey's mouth.
$500,000 bond for the charges that she's up on. Is this better for her as far as the prosecution's case goes to be in jail? Or if she bonded out, although she may be a flight risk, is it best to keep her in? I think so.
Well, I mean, I think that if there's any credibility to her own statement that she's concerned for the family safety if she says anything, and that was, you know, the statement floating around a couple of days ago, then certainly she would agree that she's safer in a place where she's under the watchful eyes of law enforcement 24 hours a day. I think that there is no good that can come from her out of custody. She is clearly not truthful, not forthcoming, and the flight risk being the biggest risk, that's the biggest concern, and also the potential danger that she does have to Kaylee if she does in fact know where Kaylee is. I don't see any upside to having her out, and frankly, I think $500,000 bail is pretty generous.
Oh, is it? Okay. All right. If you're just tuning in, LA County Assistant District Attorney Robin Sachs is here. We're talking about some of the high-profile cases, and in particular, my interview tonight with Drew Peterson. One of the things I asked Drew Peterson, or commented to Drew Peterson, was, I didn't hear about you for the longest time. Now, all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose with this wiretap and you going to the barber shop and looking at a kid the wrong way. And his attorney, Joel Brodsky, would respond. Drew just kind of laughed it off a little bit, but his attorney would respond somewhat like the attorneys for O.J. Simpson did. The more publicity, the better, because it's better for his client in a case like this. How do you respond as a DA in any case when the suspect, the accused, the alleged perpetrator, whoever, is in the news constantly, nonstop?
Well, sometimes there is benefit to the defense having their client. It usually works that way, where it's a benefit to the client. It normalizes them. It humanizes them. It gives them their chance to testify without having to be subject to cross-examination by the prosecution. It gives an opportunity for the story to get out. But at the same time, in other cases, in Drew Peterson and Scott Peterson, similar again in this regard, I think it's different when you have a celebrity who is in front of the media versus having someone who gains public attention because of their crime. And I don't think that, while Drew Peterson, I think, thinks very fondly of himself, I don't think many people out there think too fondly of him.
No.
And the more people see in front of him, I think the more disgusted, the more lack of empathy he has about his missing wife. He's completely consumed, completely narcissistic. And all of that plays into the prosecution position. So In this one, I don't know. It would be a crapshoot. I think I would want to, if I was his attorney, I'd tell him to shut up.
Yeah, you know, and many attorneys that I've interviewed have said the same thing, but in this case, he's playing on a strategy, and he's going to see if it works or if it doesn't work. Just before I let you go, Robin, I appreciate you coming on. When we see cases like this, apparently today, and I haven't seen all the details, there was an arrest in the murder of the young Army specialist, 7 months pregnant, who was found in a bathtub here not that long ago, another military person. It seems like the cops are doing pretty good work when it comes to trying to solve cases. But I'm thinking, even when I speak to Cindy Anthony here in a few minutes, she's not going to have a lot of good to say about law enforcement. You know, as a prosecutor, law enforcement, it's almost you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. In cases like this, is the system looking after or treating law enforcement and prosecutors fairly?
Well, depending on whatever perspective you're in or on, it is always easy to critique whoever the players are. When you're a prosecutor and the decision doesn't go your way, you want to blame the judge. A defense attorney may want to blame the police. The fact of the matter is that it's amazing how much work and how much good work actually does happen. I think there's so many times you hear about the lack of integrity, because that's the media story. You're not going to hear, you don't have a daily that a boy or that a girl story about what happens in courtrooms and jails and police stations all across the country. And frankly, it amazes me how many, you know, empty courtrooms and, you know, amazing jobs that law enforcement does in terms of tracking down evidence and getting people convicted and doing it right and doing it by the book. You just don't hear about that. So while I'd like to say, you know, sometimes we don't get a fair shake, I think it's like anything else. You know, in basketball there's bad calls, and football there's bad calls, and baseball there's bad calls, and there's bad calls in criminal justice as well. But I think if you look at it as a whole, we have a pretty darn good system that needs some reform.
I agree with that. Now, you're busy. You're an author. You're a TV commentator. You're an assistant DA. But you have something called SACS Facts. I like that because I get it. Tell the folks a little bit about it.
SACS Facts, you cracked me up. SACS Facts is my, my way to kind of decompress after the dark and jaded world of crime that I live in. And then when you're constantly amongst victims and suspects and defendants and really everybody who's at a loss in some ways, from the defendants to law enforcement, I mean, everyone's seeing really sad, dark things. There's, you know, two choices. You can either go to a bar and start drinking, or you can go look at the world out there of all these amazing things that are going on, people doing amazing things. And I write this blog where I send out on my website once a week, so it doesn't get too much spam in your mailboxes, yeah, where I comment on little unknown secrets and finds on the internet, in different cities around the world. It's free. I like to publicize, you know, men and women out there who are doing amazing things that should who get little or no notoriety for it. So that's my hobby.
Well, you do a great job at it, and you're one of the busiest people that are out there, and I look forward to seeing you on TV and hearing you on the radio and having you come on my show, and I appreciate that. And I told Drew Peterson that I'll have him back on again sometime. I'm not sure if I'll have him on again before he gets arrested or not, but it should be an interesting trial when that happens. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Dana. You're my favorite host. You know that.
Talk to you soon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That's L.A. County Assistant District Attorney Robin Sacks. This is the Dana Presser Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Presser.
Okay. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. I want you all to go to www.helpfindkaylee.com. That's www.helpfindkaylee.com. There you'll learn more about the missing child, Kaylee Marie Anthony. And that's one thing that the mainstream media hasn't been doing, is promoting that website, or actually promoting a search to find this young child. They have been focusing on the family, in particular the mom, Casey, and grandmother, Cindy Anthony. And I thought I'd bring on Cindy Anthony real quick tonight to talk about that. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. Obviously, this is very trying. You're trying to find your granddaughter. You're upset with the media. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the focus has been focusing on the wrong person right now. There's a lot going on with Casey. You know, we all know where Casey's at, and Casey will have her time to be able to talk to people and do things. Right now, there's a little girl that's not quite three yet that doesn't have a voice, and she can't pick up the phone, she can't dial the number, she doesn't know how to, you know, say where her address is and tell people that she's not where she's supposed to be. So the media has an obligation for responsible reporting, and every time they flash little snippets and not, you know, let someone finish a sentence, and they want to take half-truths or whatever and report on things like that, then it's just, if they put one person thinking that Kaylee's not a missing person, then it's got one person not out there actively looking for her, and that one person that's not looking for her may have just walked by her and didn't notice her.
There's been
that's my fear. Media has to be responsible when they're reporting. They have to figure out what is the most important thing that we want to happen right now with their stories. And I would hope that their number one thing that happens with the story is that this little girl is going to come home to her family. And you know, there'll be a story that they'll have to cover once Kaylee's found, so I just don't understand why their priorities aren't focusing on Kaylee, and that's my biggest frustration.
Just one quick question, because I know you're quite busy. Obviously, there has been a huge media storm. They've picked up on every little contradiction or misinterpretation, like you say, and have focused that negativity on your daughter or on you. There was a hearing today to maybe try and lower the bail of your daughter. What happened there?
Truthfully, I found out about it from a text message, the outcome of the hearing, and haven't had an opportunity to speak with her attorney about that.
Okay.
So the only way I found out, and I have not been home the entire day to look at the media coverage on it, so I really don't know everything that's going on and what actually it's all about. I mean, I know they had appealed the bond at $500,000, which is ridiculous for someone that hasn't been charged with anything. And certainly, even if she was charged with this, I mean, people that have murder cases that are charged with murder and are going to trial with murder, they have a bail that's $100,000 or less. So with her two misdemeanors and a third-degree felony, should be no more than $10,000. I think that the priorities of the judicial system is wrong right now, too. I think that there's two victims in this case. I think the case... Casey is a victim, but most importantly, Kaylee is. And again, Casey is safe, and we know where she's at, and she can, you know, stand up for herself and fight for herself, but this little girl can't. So again, you know, responsible reporting, and what's most important, is it about this bond hearing, or is it about finding Kaylee?
Absolutely. And again, I remind the folks, the webpage is www.helpfindkaylee.com, or if you're in that Orlando area, 1-800-423-TIPS if you have any information, or the Orange County Missing Persons Unit, 407-836-HELP. That's 4357. Now, Cindy, if you had a message for the media just before I let you go, what would that be?
Think about if this happened to your family and how you would want the media to cover it. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Cindy Anthony, grandmother of missing child Kaylee Anthony. And, you know, there's so many contradictions, and mom knows what's going on here. And hopefully the law enforcement, the investigators that are dealing with this case are focusing and working very hard at that. The media is I guess, doing a good job, but they're sure nailing down certain things. I'm not sure when I saw the missing persons poster last, or the website information last, and I've seen a lot of the coverage. It was more on some of these jailhouse videos and things that are being released, and I'm not sure how that's helping or hindering the case, but I wanted to bring on Cindy Anthony to, she told me, voice her displeasure against the media. I don't think she was that hard on the media, but she certainly had a message to say. Anyway, that's it. That's tonight's show. My name is Dan Pretzer, and I appreciate you all for listening. I remind you to go to our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to archives of past shows. You can listen to the show live. You can listen to my daily commentary, leave comments, or whatever. Of course, you can reach me by email at dana@scaredmonkeys.com, and we'll see you again real soon here on The Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.